This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, we welcome you here again this week to hear another outstanding episode from the Magic Word Podcast, and we have another great guest, which we're going to get to in just a few moments. But I first of all want to thank you guys again for listening. And in particular, there is one listener that I want to mention here today, and that's Pete Petroshek up in Omaha, Nebraska. Omaha is a place where I had lived for a short time, got to be good friends with a lot of the local guys, particularly Pat Hazel, who had been a longtime friend of mine, who was a magician and was and is a comedian, wrote for Jerry Seinfeld for a number of years. Anyhow, that he had introduced me to Pete Petroshek when I moved to Omaha, and I lived there for almost 2 years. And also, Pat had put me in touch with some of the restaurants and places where he had worked, and I just kind of eased into his old position. But Pete was just and is just a great guy. He used to work with the Society of American Magicians and I believe was the film librarian. He worked for a television station there in Omaha, and he had been there so long ago, he actually had worked with Johnny Carson way back when in the early days of the television station. And I had visited him in his editing room on many occasions, and he and his wife, Babe, were just like a mother and father to me. They were really wonderful when I was living up there in the 1980s, and they were great. I understand that Pete is not doing so well from the standpoint that he's losing his eyesight, but he does like to listen to these podcasts, so that way he gets to hear his friends and also perhaps meet some other friends just through listening to these podcasts, as I hope that you will make new friends also by listening to some of these guys and the conversations we have, some people who you didn't know before, but now you know more about them. And so, again, Pete, I hope that you continue to enjoy this and that you get better. And I also want to thank all the rest of the listeners for you guys listening each week as well. You know, there are a lot of ways of listening to this podcast, whether you're listening through the website or whether that you have downloaded this and listening in your car or when you're out working or jogging or walking your dog or whenever and wherever. Lots of places where that you can listen to podcasts and also different ways of listening to this podcast. If you're not aware of it, not only, of course, can you listen to this through iTunes and through Stitcher and FeedPress and through TuneIn and golly, I don't know where all else, lots of places that you can tune in, but also if you happen to own an Amazon Echo, just say, Alexa, play the Magic Word Podcast, and it will play the most recent episode. If you don't yet have an Amazon Echo, you might consider purchasing one through Amazon.com, but don't go there yet. What you need to do, of course, is go to themagicwordpodcast.com. There you will see a tab where it says Amazon Affiliate. Click on that, and there will be a link that will take you to Amazon. So this way, whenever that you purchase anything through Amazon, that through our affiliate program, that you are able to financially assist us a little bit. It's not going to cost you anything extra. It's just a little something that Amazon will give back to the Magic Word Podcast from time to time. If you'd like to make a more financial donation directly, then you're certainly welcome to do that, and we would like to have you assist us financially. That is through a one-time donation through PayPal. There again, that you can see that donate button on the website for the Magic Word Podcast, or through patreon.com/themagicword. And I think that there are a variety of ways in which you can help, and they are all appreciated. Well, I mentioned earlier that we have a lot of different guests from week to week who may not be as well known to the international community. In fact, they may not be even well known throughout the state or throughout a region, but I hope that the information that these real workers are providing in this podcast is something that that's able to help you in determining which direction you want to go and how to improve your magic. We just had that with Kurt Miller here recently, in which he was talking about planning his large illusion show that he does every holiday season. Now I want to talk with Mr. C.J. Johnson, who has worked for a number of years in the college market and also in the school shows, but also as a hypnotist, as well as doing game shows. He's really found, I think, a niche for his expertise by doing these game shows on the college circuit, as well as doing them, I guess, they're available to take out on cruise ships and other places then as well. And it's interesting to kind of hear his story on how that he had gotten into what he does, and there are some tips, I believe, that you can take also and apply to your magic and to your professional career and to marketing as well, because he really is a game show guru. So please welcome my guest this week, Mr. C.J. Johnson, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com, and I'm talking today with a longtime friend of mine and someone who has only been on this podcast briefly. We were at the TAOM some years ago, and I kind of caught him in the hallway. We had a few moments to speak, but I've always wanted to have an opportunity to sit and chat with him for a much more lengthy podcast, because you guys are going to learn a lot with the stuff we're going to talk about, hopefully, today. I'm anticipating it's going to be fantastic. I am actually outside of Austin, Texas, and it's a little place called Liberty Hill, and beyond that, out in the country at the home, and right now in the office, or I should say the private bar called the Tin Tavern, that is owned by my friend and soon to be yours, Mr. C.J. Johnson. Hi, C.J.
Woo!
That's what they do in colleges,
yeah,
I guess, is that right?
Thank you. After that introduction, whoa, I want to see that show.
Yeah. This has got to be great. It's going to be wonderful. Well, you've been speaking with that you've been doing colleges for how many years, actually?
Since 2000. Yeah, I think about 2000.
2000,
yeah.
So about 18 years or so
yeah,
roughly.
Well, yeah. No, I guess it's longer than that. Because I started doing colleges, I guess we're at 21 years now. 21 years ago, I did my first college show. And I'm still doing that same school. So, yay.
They're still having you back.
Yeah, they're still having me back. The two schools that booked me first,
right?
21 years later, still going back to both of those schools.
Still back.
Yeah.
And also, prior to that, though, were you just doing kind of some local things? I mean, you're Austin is your home.
Yeah. Basically, well, I was doing magic.
Yeah.
Before that, and it was one of those hypnosis kind of came about. You know, they say that when the student's ready, the teacher appears.
Right.
And
how zen-like of you.
Pardon?
How zen-like of you to say
like
that.
Well, it was very true. It was like I had a separate, this was like post-divorce, and I had a little apartment, and then I had an office warehouse space, and I had to walk maybe 300, 400 yards to go out and get my mail.
Yeah.
In the mail that day was a thing about hypnosis training, and I read it all the way back to my office, walking back there. I read the whole thing, never sat it down, called the guy, said, if I learn this, if I come to your training, am I going to be able to hypnotize people? And he said, yes. And I said, are you sure? He said, yes. I said, all right, here's my American Express card.
Yeah.
And I booked it, literally never sat the piece of paper down, which was kind of, which was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to the training, I already had my first three shows booked. So like training ended on a Tuesday. I had a show Friday night and like the following Sunday or Monday. And then another one that was a couple weeks later. So I was pretty motivated to learn.
Would you say it's because it's that easy or that you felt that confident? I mean
it's because I'm an idiot.
I was going
to
say.
Yeah, I mean, nothing's going to inspire you to, nothing's going to put a fire to your feet to have a project done more than having that project book or having a new show. Like when I was doing school shows, and I used to do hundreds of school shows a year.
Uh-huh.
I would always
school,
sell the
schools?
Shows, always grade school
okay.
shows.
Mm-hmm.
I did a motivational program called The Magic Inside, which I then wrote into a book and sold to other magicians and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm going to talk about that later,
and
too.
And I did a reading show, and I did a my first school show was a safety show, and it was David Ginn released a book about safety magic for children.
Oh, sure, safety magic, sure.
And I was like, oh, well, that'll get me into schools, I'll mm-hmm. do that. And so that was probably 1993, 1994.
Yeah.
And I created a character called Safety Sam, and it was kind of a, not a clown character, but it's like I had a mustache and had a backstory of being a circus guy who ran the safest circus in the world. And, you know, it was all just silly stuff. But I mean, I sold the show.
All around Texas or all just around the Austin area?
All around Texas.
Okay.
I think I put a pin in the map and I picked every county that was within a 3-hour drive because I figured I want to do this show as much as possible. So sure. The more bait I throw out, the more likely I'm going to catch something. So it was a big blast. And so I did shows like as far as Huntsville. I never got into far northeast Texas. I never got into far west Texas. But Houston, Dallas, Austin, all the areas in between, San Antonio. And if I could drive there in 3 hours from here.
Yeah. Is that kind of like where Oscar Munoz currently still does shows all around Texas? Like some of the same schools?
I guess I don't know where Oscar does shows, but he's great. His school show is fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I've never... It's been a while since I've done school shows, but we had some time that we overlapped, and everybody who ever had Oscar had good things to say about him. And there was a ventriloquist that was working the circuit then too. Is it Nacho Estrada? Is that is that a person?
That is. I remember that name. Sure.
Everybody raved about that guy.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's good. That's what I want to be. I want to be the guy that everybody raves about. Like literally never heard a negative comment about either of those guys.
Uh-huh.
Always raving fans. So
that
was cool. And that's a good thing to aspire to right there.
Well, that's true. And so then you carry that on. And obviously with the college circuit that you were kind of doing college now. And colleges, they're looking for something that's going to be a little bit different. Because I think what I want to talk about a little bit on the podcast here today is college shows. Because I have a lot of people saying, I'm interested in doing that. And that's not going to be something that is easy. Like I was going to say hypnotism. That wasn't easy either. I know it is. I mean, but you just jump right into it. But the point is that to do this, you have to go to the NACA conferences. I mean, there is a lot of work and everything. Now, and you and Brian Brushwood have been partners and buddies since childhood and everything. Of course,
I was an adult.
Well, that's right. He is a kid. But does he still do college shows?
He doesn't
much
do a lot of college shows anymore. He'll do some, but he doesn't do a lot. He mostly makes his living doing podcasting. Mm-hmm. And he's got,
I think, four.
Four podcasts a week that he does. He does Night Attack, which is a comedy show. They've done a couple of albums.
Mm-hmm.
He does NSFW was the precursor to Night Attack.
Oh, okay.
When it was with I don't know some network.
John or okay.
And then they branched off and did that. And then he does a show. I don't know if he still does Cord Killers or Cord Cutters or something like that about. You know, getting rid of your TV and telephones and stuff like that and going strictly internet-based.
Right.
And then he does Modern Rogue, which I actually watch Modern Rogue quite a bit. It's it's interesting, interesting show. And then Scam School, he's been doing for 10 years and has never missed a Tuesday.
Really?
In 10 years.
Every Tuesday, once a week?
Every Tuesday.
Is it live?
No. They tape them. And have them cut and loaded up. But I think that's really remarkable for 10 years in a row to never miss a date is, I think that's a phenomenal thing. Cause I remember when he signed to do, you know, I mean, we go way back and, you know, I remember when he first said, hey, I'm going to go out and do this show. I was like, oh, that'll be
a fun little thing for a little while.
Sure didn't see that it was, you know, 10 years later, he was still going to be doing it and would have built an empire out of it.
Yeah.
But he's doing great. I couldn't be prouder.
But then with NACA, I was going to say, again, people are asking me, well, how do you really get, that's one area I've never gone into or school shows and particularly college circuits. So in doing that with NACA, they really are showcasing. You take your act to there. Is that right? Or how's NACA actually working?
You do. I don't showcase. The last time I showcased was 2003.
Now explain what showcasing is versus showcases just having
that
a booth.
You pay them to go in and do a show. And there will be agents and there will be people, oh, it'll be a good showcase for you. And it's like, that's bull. But it's not the case in most cases. But for these college booking conferences, these are qualified buyers that you're sitting there who are there specifically to book you.
To buy talent for
so
the schools.
So this is a good opportunity if used properly. That being said.
That's annual thing?
So, well, they do regional conferences and they do national conferences.
Okay.
But there's competition to be selected for a showcase. You have to be good.
Oh, you just can't pay them to be guaranteed that you're going to be.
Right. In theory, you have to be good in order to get a showcase. I've seen some magicians action, yeah. who got national showcases and got there, and it was like the slow clap.
It was bad. Okay.
But I've also seen people go in and do great. Mm-hmm. For me personally, I found I booked as much work being there, connecting with people, as I did being there showcasing and connecting with people. Showcasing didn't get me that much more booking, so I don't do the showcasing.
Now, by being there, you're saying that you're just walking around, or is that you have a booth, actually?
Yeah, you have to have a booth. You can't
so you buy
just,
a booth,
yeah,
I guess.
You can't just go. You have to buy a booth, and it's expensive. Mm-hmm. Like a national membership is, you know, $800 to $1,000.
For a 10x10 size booth or something?
Well, that's just membership.
Oh, just a
joint.
So
that you can have the privilege
to buy a
booth.
Now, again, NACA stands for National Association of College...
Of Campus Activities.
Campus Activities, okay.
So, but like those
you're paying just to join, and then you have to buy the booth on top of that,
right.
Then annually. Okay.
But those organizations are losing some of their benefit. Because when they were started... You know, it was the 80s and 90s before the internet.
The internet, exactly.
And if you wanted to, you know, if you wanted to find a hypnotist, you had to find somebody who knew a hypnotist. Mm-hmm. Or you wanted to find a good magician who would be right for a college market. You had to know somebody. That's why agents were really big then. But with the internet coming around, now it's like, well, I want a hypnotist. I can type in hypnotist into Google and I can see all these people's videos and stuff.
Do you think people, I should say schools in particular, do you think that they book somebody local? Let's say that you're in the Northeast and they'll book someone out of Boston as opposed to booking you here out of Texas?
No.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. They don't care. It's not their money.
And these are usually students, aren't they?
It's usually students, but they find something that they like and then they book that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't ever, I shouldn't say I don't ever, but I very seldom do any colleges within 2 hours of home.
Hmm. Okay.
Like very rarely.
And all of it.
And with my hypnosis show, very, very rarely just in the state of Texas. Mm-hmm. Now with the other things that we do, we play in Texas a lot, but with the hypnosis show, very rarely, you know, I play Florida a lot. I play the Northeast a lot.
Do you do clubs also? Club engagements?
I don't anymore. I used to.
Comedy clubs, nothing like that.
No, I kind of have scaled back and just focused. I do corporate work when I get it, but I don't market to it anymore. Mm-hmm. I did.
Who do you market to? Just the colleges?
Just colleges.
Okay, for the
and most colleges and I guess I don't market to the high school grad nights anymore.
It's hard,
but I still
for that.
I still get those because most of the work that I do each year, about 80% of it is people who have had me before.
You know, when I was some years ago, my son Sean was a senior in high school, and I was involved with the project graduation. And for those people overseas who don't know what project graduation is, it's like an overnight thing that after graduation, they're trying to keep the students or the graduates basically in a lock-in, you know, in a place overnight, so they're not out celebrating and, you know, drinking underage and have a wreck and die or whatever. So there are a lot of activities and everything that they have. Well, anyhow, I was in charge of entertainment, and I had recommended getting a hypnotist, and I had the hardest problem because most of them were mothers who were involved with the committees, and they said, well, I don't want my son, you know, for the next 6 months to be clucking like a chicken. I said, well, you don't understand hypnosis. It's comedy. It's entertainment, and they're not going to, and I was trying to explain it, and we finally got it, but I had to overcome a lot of obstacles. And I think that's difficult.
You get that every once in a while. I don't get it as much as I did anymore. I think we're becoming a more enlightened society. But 20 years ago, when I first started doing grad nights, I would get that a lot where, you know, well, we've got parents who are against it. And I would say, well, you know that their kid doesn't have to come to the show, but that doesn't mean that the other 500 kids there should be deprived of it because of that one kid. You know, it's like saying, well, that kid can't have sugar, so there's no sugar at the event. Or that kid can drink nothing but water, so nobody else can do anything but drink water. It's like, you can have that one kid sit out, or he can just watch a show and not come up. That's fine.
Yeah. I had something kind of like that once. I was on a Southwest airline, and they said, we're not going to be serving peanuts on this flight because there is someone who has a peanut allergy, even to peanut dust. And I hadn't had breakfast or lunch. I said, can I have the peanuts just so after we get off, I'll open them. I promise.
Well, they'll do pretzels then.
And so, well, this was before they'd been pretzels. This was many years ago. Yeah. And so it means that's all they had were just peanuts. And they wouldn't even give me the peanuts because they were afraid I was going to. I said, I promise I won't. I said, no, we're not going to do that. But I mean, anyhow, that was a different situation.
Yeah. Well, Brian's daughter, talking back to him, Brian's daughter is very allergic to peanuts.
Really?
Yeah.
Penny?
Yeah.
Huh. I'll be doggone. Did not know that. So Anywho, so then you kind of branched out from that to going then, and Kerry Pollack's Zonk, I guess, kind of hooked you, or what? How'd you get into the game show thing?
Well, actually, so for a long time, I had wanted to do game shows.
Yeah.
But it's like I was so busy as a performer that I was like, I don't need more things for me to do. And then it hit me. It's like, wait, you don't have to go out and perform the shows. You can have somebody else perform the shows. You can do them when you want to.
Right.
And then it became a viable business. So I had a short list of people that I was like, if I can get any of these guys on board, I think I can make this happen. And mm-hmm. so to the way Gus tells the story, I don't remember.
Explain
it.
Who Gus is.
Gus is my, one of my best friends. Yeah. He was my best man at my wedding. I was best man at his wedding. Gus Davis, the greatest live game show host I've ever seen. He's phenomenal. And all the things that make him good are things I can't teach him. They're just instinctual things. Mm-hmm. And he's hosted way more game shows than me. Mm-hmm. Like if I go out to it and do a client and they see me host the game show, it's like, oh my God, that was the best. But if I go in after Gus, it'll be like, yeah, can we get Gus back next again? Year? And it's like, oh man, talk about hurting me.
Yeah.
But I understand. It's like, yeah, but also I there may be if they see me first, then that's the way it's got to be done. And I tell myself that so I can sleep at night. Really, Gus is better at it than I am. But
so he developed the show, the game shows.
I called Gus. He was just graduating from college. And to hear him say it, and I don't remember this happening, but I don't doubt that it's true. I called him and said, hey, I'm thinking about starting a game show business. Would you be interested in hosting? And he was like, yeah. I was like, all right, cool. And hung up. No more discussion. And he just looked at his phone and was like, wait, what's going on? And then he 6 weeks later, I called him. I was like, all right, I got these four shows booked on these dates. Do these dates work for you? But I hadn't talked to him about it, because we were friends then, but we weren't close like where we are now, And now he's my business partner. He owns stock in the company and all that as well. And our business wouldn't work without him.
Mm-hmm. He's an integral part of it, basically, by now. Sure.
So we started it. So I had the idea of starting it, and I was going to do Survey Says, which is a Family Feud style game show. I was going to do that first. And then I was at TAOM in Houston, mm-hmm. and I don't remember what year. It was Scotto's year, whatever year he was.
Mm-hmm. That would have been TAOM president, probably around, was it 8 or 12?
Yeah, before that, 2003.
Three, maybe?
Yeah, 2003 is when we started it. So,
okay.
Yeah, I guess I do know what year, because I don't have to worry about what...
That's right, let's go back about that year. When you're
but I was there and I was talking about the game shows and Harry Maurer, mm-hmm. I was talking with him, and Harry's a great, great magician. I love his backstory. Yeah. I love everything about Harry. Yeah. He's just great.
Wild about Harry.
Yeah. Totally wild about Harry. But, I told him I was starting a game show company. He goes, oh, well, I just was at Magic Live or Desert Magic, whatever it was called then, mm-hmm. or one of the big magic conventions in Vegas. And he said, and Kerry Pollack's putting together a game show, and he was offering. He says, I got the prospectus on it at the house. I'll bring it tomorrow if you want to take a look at it. He says, I looked at it. I'm not going to do it, but it might be something you're interested in. So he brought it back, and I looked at it. I'm like, this looks great.
Yeah.
And so I decided that I could either.
It's called Bonk.
Bonk. Uh-huh. And I decided that I was either going to be competing against it in the college market, or I was going to own it in the college market. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of a business maneuver to own it in the college market. And so when I got it, I had got exclusive rights to it in the college market.
Because he was doing it on cruise ships, I think.
He was doing cruise ships, and he was doing it in clubs, and mm-hmm. and he was doing some colleges, and not a lot, but because you really got to focus.
And explain, people understand, I think, the Family Feud kind of a thing, but for those who are overseas or whomever not seen Bonk, briefly explain how that game
is. Okay, so this is the hardest part about selling Bonk is... If I tell you any of our other game shows, you can describe it by saying, oh, it's like this show.
Yeah, but Bonk's unlike anything.
But Bonk isn't like anything. And so, as you know, you're dealing with a gatekeeper who's generally getting information. Mm-hmm. And so they take Bonk back to their boss, and it's a much harder sell because You know, they're having to go back and say, oh, well, Bonk is a game show. It's a comedy game show, or a comedy show where a game is taking place. And the questions are ridiculously simple or simply ridiculous. And people hit themselves over a hard hat with a big mallet. No, it's foam rubber, you know, so it doesn't hurt, but it causes a sensor to go off. And then they answer these questions. And it's really funny.
Okay. And so when you explain that, it's going, what?
It's yeah, hard to describe. Sure, exactly. And I've described it thousands of times, you know, and I rambled a little more than if I was doing my elevator pitch for it.
Yeah.
But what Bonk did for us was it got the phone ringing a lot. But a lot of times people, because they couldn't transfer their enthusiasm for the game,
so
they'd see it, they'd love it.
Yeah.
They'd be like, okay, yeah, we were going to do a game show, but we want to do this one instead because it's easier for them to understand.
Oh, I see.
So, and we did a national showcase with Bonk at NACA mm-hmm. in 2004, maybe 2005 or six. And it was like literally the second or third time that we'd ever done Bonk. Mm-hmm. And we did it at a national showcase.
Mm-hmm.
And we get there and we go to do our sound check and we turn on the computer. And at the time, you know, I mean, this was a long time ago, this was 12 years ago, technology has changed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, the computer unit was built into the base of a podium, and then the wires went up through the truss, and there was a touchscreen built into the top of a host podium that you ran all the questions from.
Right.
We plugged it in, we turned it on, and we get an error that said, operating system not found.
Oops.
And now we've paid, like, national showcases are, I think the showcase itself is like $750, but then it's $100 to submit. But I mean, we're easily $3,000 into it by the time I pay, you know, I paid Gus because Gus was an employee then. I paid Gus his way up there. I paid all of our food and lodging at the Gaylord and prize money and the whole nine yards. And everything's not functional.
Wow.
And so the tech crew is like, all right, well, we're going to tech everything else and we'll get this fixed before the thing. And they're like, well, what if you can't? We're like, yep, not an option. We're going to figure it out. But what if? Nope. We're going to spike it. Everything here. Let's spike it. Let's practice getting the crew, bringing the set in because it's a big truss set and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make sure everybody knows where it goes. We'll fix it.
Put this cart before the horse.
Right. So we do our sound check without the computer, the video, and the scoring was digital or was like a clock mechanism then, as opposed to a digital screen. And we lit it and everything. We only get 15 minutes for sound check. So we're like, you know, we'll be back. We'll make it work.
Yeah.
So we go back to the, take everything back to the hotel room. I've got the computer in pieces on the bed and we're taking everything apart and putting it back together. And I turn it on and it's no operating system. No operating systems. Turn it blue screen, Windows 95. Yes. Or Windows 2000.
Whatever.
I think it's probably
like
that. And we're like, okay. We got it. And crash. It's like, no. So do some more stuff. And just the road vibrations had loosened some stuff because it wasn't a laptop. It was a desktop computer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so we get it. It works. Do the program. That works. Put everything back together, reassemble it, plug it in, doesn't work, check everything again, works, turn it off, works, turn it off, works, go. So we go to the showcase is going on now, by the way. We're the last thing in the showcase. During this whole time, the show that we're closing is in progress. And we take it. We get it in there, and now the MC goes out. Our set comes on stage. We take the podium. We hook it in. Everything's working, but the guy's like, I don't have audio.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have audio. And we can see backstage there's a clock, you know, and if you go over time, they bring the lights down.
You're done.
On you, right?
Yeah.
And so we can see the MC's clock ticking down, you know, and there's a minute left. Like, there's no audio. I'm like, all right. So I'm down there with a flashlight, and I'm undoing jacks and stuff, and it's like 5, 4, 3. I mean, it's like a movie.
I was going to say, it sounded like Goldfinger, you know, whenever the bomb was about to go off in Fort Worth.
Yeah, it's exactly what it was. And it gets down to 3, and I look over, and the sound man gives me the double thumbs up. Like, he's got audio.
Yeah.
And we're like, yes. And then you hear the MC, ladies and gentlemen, represented by Game Shows to Go in booth number 404. Give it up for Bonk, the comedy game show. And the curtain opens as I'm diving off stage to get out from there. Because, you know, Gus is hosting. I'm just the tech guy for it. I'm diving off stage. And then Gus goes out and just knocks it out of the park and does it.
Like nothing was...
Great
too,
yeah. Yeah. And then...
And it worked. Perfect.
It worked. Everything went great. Yeah. And then Gus, we had a friend of ours, a girl that we had met at a conference. She videoed the show for us. And then 13 years later, Gus married the girl who videotaped that show for us.
Was she one of the students at the
time? She was an act. She was an improv performer.
Okay, one of the other performers that you're competing against.
Yeah.
Okay. That's funny. That's interesting. So obviously it's gone on that's more digital, and your business has grown such that as you show me around your office and everything over here, that you actually make a lot of this stuff yourself, and all of the, you get 3D printers to make the whatever, to boxes and et cetera, and it's continuing to grow and keep up to date with the new technology.
Yep. And one of the things that I like about the game shows and the other things that we do as opposed to magic and hypnosis is that there's a barrier of entry to it. So to be a magician, all you got to do is say, I'm a magician.
Print your business cards.
Yeah. Or to be a hypnotist, I'm a hypnotist. All you got to do is say those words, I'm a hypnotist, and then go out and see if you can pull it off. Mm-hmm. In order to produce a game show, you're going to have some software. You're going to have some stage setting. You're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to put several thousand dollars into it. You know, we started with way less than we should have started with. But we, you know, we spent $40,000 on stuff so that we could produce a show. And it was the first thing, as Brian Brushwood was happy to point out, it was the first thing that I worried about the product for before I worried about fulfilling orders. So I built everything.
Yes.
The opposite of the way that I used to do it, where I would book it and then I would book everything so that I could fulfill. I fulfilled orders that we didn't have yet.
And what do you think is the big distinction on that? Do you think that it's a better thing to actually have the product first? That's
not
kind of
for
again,
me,
a chicken
not,
or egg, but
not from a motivation point of view for me. From a motivation point of view, it's like, you know, if I have that deadline, because more gets done in that 48 hours before your first gig of doing something, more gets done in that 48 hours than in the 48 days beforehand, because you're now deadline realizing all of the things that have to get done.
Right.
And so that was, you know, it got us off to a much slower start than what
you
than
had
what
anticipated
we would have
begin
otherwise.
With.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But what you're doing now, it is easier. It can be put together in cases and all that, I guess, and
well,
certainly shipped a lot.
We have two full game show sets. So they're the trucks that are out there. You can see them out the window. But
yep.
We have a box van and we have a pickup with a camper shell. And we have streamlined the technology down so that it plays bigger than it did when we started with a much smaller footprint. As we've figured out technologies, as we've created technologies, we've paid to have our own software written. We've got a new show, Fast Action Trivia, with buzzers and microphones and stuff that were literally from the circuit boards up, built in house, because there wasn't anything that met the requirements of the look that I wanted things to have.
You wanted to be a cleaner
look
on stage?
I wanted it to look like a TV game show, but fit into a suitcase.
That's what you're shooting for.
So that was the goal for that particular show.
Yeah.
Like, we have versions where we can fly in and do almost all of our shows.
How many different game shows do you actually have?
Seven.
Okay, wow. And Gus does them all?
Gus does them all. I host them when I need to. There's only one show that I don't... that I don't host right now because it's like I'm just not comfortable doing it. And Gus is
good at
totally good at
yeah,
it. And,
right.
And then we all have our favorites. Bonk is my favorite game to host because the
think
character
it your baby?
Of it.
Is that part of the reason you've seen it from its infancy?
It
and you
fits
wanna...
my personality. That's really mostly what it is because it's kind of a smart-ass game.
Yeah.
It's very tongue-in-cheek. There's
like some of the, what are the questions? For an example, you say some of them are...
A question would be like, you know, 3 out of 4 people make up what percentage of the population?
Okay.
You know, and people get it wrong most of the time. 60. You're in college.
Yeah.
My all-time favorite game show question is, do you pronounce the capital of Kentucky as Louisville or Louisville?
Lexington. Frankfurt, sorry.
Frankfurt, yeah. Well, people always say Louisville.
Yeah.
They even in Kentucky, they miss that question.
Oh, that's funny.
Because what people don't realize is when you're playing a game show, the pressure, the
like how many
the heat is on you to answer sure. quickly so that you get the points, and so you're just going with the
it
thing
is
that
difficult.
Sounds right.
Like if you're watching Jeopardy on TV, you can answer the questions, but when you're actually on stage, it's a completely different situation. But you know, like when someone would say, you know, how many animals were there of each that Moses put on the ark?
Right, you know? Right.
None.
It was Noah that built the ark. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So the secret to Bonk for writing for it, which is difficult, and it came with a bunch of questions, but there were never themes, but there were runs of questions.
So there weren't themes like they were customized for that school necessarily?
No, because it's really hard to write for Bonk because mm-hmm. there will be a run of questions. So, you know, you may say, if you're in Hawaii, how do you pronounce the word spelt A-L-O-H-A? You know, and they'll bonk in and be aloha. It's all right. If you're in Hawaii, how do you pronounce the word spelled L-U-A-U? You know, luau. Yeah, yeah. If you're in Hawaii, how do you pronounce the word spelled U-H-A-U-L? You know, and then they'll bonk in and they'll be like, aloha. And you're like, no, it's pronounced U-Haul. They got those big orange trucks that help you move. You know, and so the third question, you've been led down a path.
Yeah.
In order to get the gag on the rule of three at the end of it. So that's just one of the ways that it's used there. Writing more questions is way more difficult for Bonk than it is for, you know, a fast action trivia or a survey says.
Here's something. A quick one. If H-O-U-S-E spells house and H-O-R-S-E spells horse, what does H-O-U-R-S spell?
Horse.
No.
H? Oh, yeah. Hours.
Hours.
Damn it. Damn you. Nice.
There you go.
I was going for horse, like if you're horse. I heard it as horse, like you're hard of speaking.
So, but for a corporate type of a thing, do you say I can also customize this? If you give
me some
ideas and that kind of a thing.
So, and that's one of the things like I work trade shows with the game shows. And that's my sweet spot is blending information about a company with fun game shows. And so it's like on the fly, I'll be asking questions about, let's say that the show is in Vegas, you know, mm-hmm. so we're having a game show and it's in, or a trade show and it's in Vegas. And my customer is First Advantage. First Advantage is a background screening company. And so my job is to get people in there to teach them about First Advantage, also to entertain them, and to have our booth full all day long. So unlike...
Which is what you're supposed to do as a trade show person anyhow. Is to, right.
But I'll do it differently than like some trade show magicians will do a show and then people will filter out and then they'll bring in a big crowd again and build a crowd. For me, it's an ongoing thing.
I think you need
we're
going to
get players in there as much as, you know, at all times there are going to be people in our booth.
So when you do that, is that an ongoing thing or do you have like set times like... At the top and the bottom of the hour, we're going to do a 10-15 minute show, or how do you?
So my theory on it is I never know what time the most important person in the room is going to walk
That's
by.
True.
So why would I want to take a break?
So you're going like 8 hours.
So I'll go the full time, and people, like the people manning the booth are like, I just don't know how you can do that because they're taking it in shifts, and all they're doing is scanning people's badges and handing them flyers.
Right.
And I'm big energy the whole time, you know, and it's like, hey, come on in. And so I'll mix in a general trivia question. If it's about Las Vegas, you know, it's like, you know, what's the name of the Las Vegas airport? You know, what's the 3-letter code for the Las Vegas airport? You know, mm-hmm. LAS. If you're flying to ATL, what city are you flying to? Mm-hmm. Atlanta. Oh, wow. Where is the world headquarters of First Advantage? Mm-hmm. Atlanta. You know, it's okay. They just came to you. See how much you know about our company already? You know, and then I'll ask them about, I'll ask them, you know, like one of the questions I'll have for that particular client is, according to comedy legends Abbott and Costello, who's on first? Mm-hmm. And then they'll answer who?
Yeah.
And I'll be like, no, I'll ask the questions here. You know, who?
Okay. Yeah.
The guy on first base, you know, and I'll kind of get a rhythm going back and forth. And it's funny, you know, not for the people in the booth because they've heard me say it 97 times already that week, but it's funny for them the first couple of times. But then I'll say, first, yeah, because you're at the first advantage booth. We do background screenings. The only thing, we're the only name you need to know in background screenings. And then I'll ask questions like, to customize it for them. I'll say, what is the average jury? Negligent hiring is when you hire somebody who had a criminal offense. You should have done a background check. You didn't. They commit an offense while in your employ and you get sued for it. What is the average jury award for a negligent hiring case? And people will guess, and it's like, nope, the actual award is $1 million. The average background check costs about $28, which is more, $1 million or $28? And they're like, $1 million. It makes a lot of sense to do that background check, doesn't it? And then somebody will buzz in and they'll go, yes, it does. Yes, that's right. And what company should be doing that background check? And then they'll go, First Advantage for the win.
Yeah.
And so I get all excited about it. And yeah, I make sure that we always end with them saying the company's name, sure, or product at the end of it, and build up big excitement. So that's one of those ways that people use a game show for customizing it for their event. Colleges will sometimes have us do things, like for Survey Says, it's just like a, feud style game, and they'll have us do, name a place in Denton to go on a first date.
Okay.
Or name a popular major on campus, or
right,
a place that our students go.
Well, I remember when we had
break.
This at the TAOM, and Gus was the game show host, and they asked different questions like, where was the convention for TAOM last year? Where will it be next year? Or
right,
name a president. Yeah.
Yeah. Name a city that has hosted a TAOM convention.
Yeah. Things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll do things like that, or name one of the big effects on a David Copperfield special.
Mm-hmm. Be customized for magicians and kind of a thing
right,
like that then too. Going back to trade shows for a minute, I agree with you 100% on that, CJ, because I don't like to have like a little thing saying, top of the hour, whenever you're going to be having a magic show, because you're exactly right. Different classes, different things are being let out during a day. And so you have a different ebb and flow of traffic coming by your booth. And so if you're going to be doing this on an ongoing basis, you're going to eventually catch the right person or people,
exactly,
who are going to be able to get the right message. And so I always keep mine ongoing. I mean, I'm not going to hold them for a half hour necessarily. I might have a break, but then I'm going to start back if I see a few more people and then start another crowd. It may be a 10-minute show, maybe a 30-minute show. Depends on, how interactive that I can be and how big of a crowd that I get.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes they'll make me take a break. They're like, hey, why mm-hmm. don't you go... get a drink, have some lunch.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, that's all right. But then I, Kim will go with me and she'll just kind of be there to bring me water and make sure that
Kim, your wife.
Yeah, my wife. Yeah. But sometimes she's like, yeah, I think they need a break from your voice.
Well, now what about the other?
Because I'm going bam, bam, bam.
What about the surrounding booths? Because I've had been told before you start that you don't want to have your microphone too loud, your speakers too loud, that's going to interact, with others, and that they have a problem and they're going to come over and complain and come and there are certain things. So what do you do?
Before every show, I walk around to all the people around me. I say, hey, I'm CJ. I'm going to be hosting game shows over at the booth here.
Right.
I want everybody in our row to benefit from me being here. I want traffic to be on our aisle, even when everybody else's aisle is dead. Mm-hmm. I said, that being said, I'm going to be bigger than life. I'm going to be loud. If I get loud and I'm interfering with your business, please mm-hmm. come and say something to me or to my wife. She's the one with the pink streak in her hair, or to any of the people in the First Advantage booth, and we'll take the volume down. But say something to us mm-hmm. and we'll be totally fine with it.
Right.
Don't go and complain to... to the people hosting the show.
Yeah.
Just come and say something. And right. because I'm friendly about it and I'm proactive about it, every once in a while we'll come and say, hey, can you take it down just a little bit? It's like, yeah, you bet. Thanks for,
right.
Thanks for letting us know. We want to be a good neighbor. And sure. then every once in a while, as they're there, I'll say, thank you guys for your attention. We appreciate it. Make sure you get information from us. And then, not everybody's got a big mouth like me standing around. So, talk to the people around us too, because most of the shows that I work, the competition is not going to be directly
across from you.
From
sure,
me.
Sure.
Yeah. And especially like, those big companies that are, buying four or five booths or six booths, and all together, they're big cornerstone markets, like the background search companies are not going to be
right
across from another.
Well, taking this in a little bit different direction, I want to also mention that I remember that you had something that was a download PDF file that was for a children's book that basically has all the tricks, and you just kind of customize it, put your own cover and your picture on it and everything, and then staple it, and you can give those out and that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Is that something that you still offer or still have?
I do still have it. I haven't. It's another one of those things that, ironically, I have a marketing book that I never ever market anymore.
Well, I was going to talk about that next, too.
But But it's still there. As far as I know, it was the first instant author kit, and mm-hmm. now there's been several other people who
have
done it.
And that was when, like, 90s or something?
Yeah, that was 1993 or 4 yeah. mm-hmm. that came in. I think 1994 was the first the first printing.
And that's something that you can also print out and you can give away, like to the birthday child, or you can give them out, or you can sell them or whatever that you want to do.
We used them for years. I sold them at the back of the room. I'd sell the books for $5.
If people want to buy that now, how do they get hold of that? I mean,
At moreshowsmoremoney.com.
Okay. Which goes to the next thing about your marketing, More Shows, More Money. That's an excellent book, and it's a spiral-bound book and has a lot of good material. Talk a little bit about what's in there. I think that's kind of
It's real good basics. It was also written in 1994. Let's give that caveat.
I agree, but it can be updated. But still, there are things that are important still today.
So there's nothing in it about like I don't pitch it a lot anymore because there's nothing in it about SEO. There's nothing in it about
building the websites,
about CRMs, and about doing online business.
Okay.
It was back when I was doing, and I still use all these techniques. I still do postcards. Mm-hmm. A personal letter is far more impactful now in the day of email.
Yeah.
Getting something that's handwritten and addressed specifically to you mm-hmm. is much more meaningful now than it was when we all sent lots and lots and lots of mail. Yeah. So all of those techniques still really work. But I have not updated it for today's stuff. That being said, everybody who buys them, and I still sell 10 or 12 a year. Mm-hmm.
More money,
always,
more shows.
More shows, more money.
More shows, more money. Yeah. .com, and that has information on that.
Has two different instant author kits and the Magic Inside program, which I think I only have one of those left, which is how I went into elementary schools with the motivational program. And it's got all of the scripts and you could take everything there and you could launch a career as a school show magician.
Right.
And it was all the...
And you still can.
Sure. Yeah. And it's all the real world stuff. The thing that I don't like is when I read a marketing book and it says, here's what you do for if you want a career in magic in the college market, call these agents. And it's like, yes, I know Barbara. She's going to laugh at you if you call her. She's not going to, you don't want to... You don't want to send her a bunch of stuff, mm-hmm.
I've seen that like on cruise ship books. They'll say, okay, here's a chapter of all the different agents and everything.
Right.
And so, you wouldn't want to necessarily.
There's a difference between a sophisticated buyer and an unsophisticated buyer. So a sophisticated buyer actually understands the market. They understand what a real testimonial looks like. They understand what a real video looks like, not an edited video. They're going to generally want to see 10 minutes of your show without any editing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, exactly.
Because anybody can edit a 3-minute video to make it look just gangbusters.
Yeah, it'll look very glitzy. Well, the same thing like with cruise ship agents, when I'd sent mine to them, they said, well, we need to see like a full 30-minute show unedited. And they do need to see that kind of a thing. I think that's great. On another subject, I remember you also lecturing at the TOM one time, and I'll never forget this. You were talking about the importance of a book and who would like to have this book, and everybody said yes. But it wasn't until that somebody actually comes up and takes it off there. Now, that's what I'm talking about. You have to
get off your ass and do something.
Right.
You can't just say, I want it. And that's a problem with everything is people are like, oh, I really want that. Well, yeah, do you want to enough to work 20 hours a day?
How badly do you really want it?
And it's like, if all you do is sit and wish about it, that's never going
to
happen.
And sometimes they take investments, not only of your effort to get up and go and do it, but tangibly with your pocketbook to go and buy this course or whatever. Like you said, you learn how to be a hypnotist. You didn't say, hey, I wish I could do it. I'm going to do it and start booking shows. You had to learn how to do it. You had to pay somebody to learn how to do that.
Right. And you had to be committed to doing it. And there's nothing that'll motivate you more to learn hypnosis than having a hypnosis show booked.
Yeah.
And when the guy who coached me, Scott McFall, when he found out at the training that I had a show Friday, he was like, really?
He said, what?
I'm like, yeah, I do. And he's like, that's amazing, And he told me, he's like, you're going to do a lot of colleges. That's where I see you working.
Right.
And it was just no
turning
back.
What about insurance for a hypnosis show?
Getting a lot harder to get now.
That's what I thought.
It's getting a lot harder to get my insurance, but it covers, our game shows and you need to look at your insurance if it's through like the Clowns of America or the Performers Association.
I know the IBM and the SAM have liability insurance, which is separate. That's not going to cover hypnosis.
I don't know that those cover hypnosis anymore, but they also have limits on income. So if you make more than $100,000 a year, those insurance policies will not cover you.
Well, I know, like the one that I have through the IBM or the SAM, I think I have mine through the IBM, my liability. It has different levels of income, and it goes up as to however much at some point, you know, it costs you more for the premium annually, you know, for that. So they do have different levels, at least that way. I don't know if you know that or not.
I'm not an IBM or SAM.
Yes, you're not an IBM. Oh, you need to join the IBM again.
Not a member of any of them.
Or the SAM. But the point is, as far as insurance, and the thing that I have heard is that there might be some issues in which some people might have lingering hypnosis or something? Is that what the potential is?
There are people who are doing irresponsible things with hypnosis, who are doing like the
smoking
bridge.
Cessation?
That's fine. Smoking cessation, that's
human
great.
Bridge, and they hurt themselves.
So, and somebody gets hurt doing that, having people do things physical, or people are tripping and falling or falling out of
the chair. So it's not just doing funny things. There are things that actually fall or hurt themselves.
But as far as lingering effects, it's like that person's just an attention whore. That's all that's happening there. There's no lingering effects. And by definition, if you're saying I'm hypnotized, I can't help but do what the hypnotist says. If at the end of the show, I say all suggestions are removed, and that's the suggestion you've chosen to not follow, how can you claim that I was in control of everything if I told you you're not going to be affected by any suggestion given up to this point? So there's a weird thing. I don't know if there's any case study on that or anything, but you know, you have people up and you're doing physical things. People are dancing and running around and stuff like that. So eventually somebody's going to trip and fall. Somebody's going to fall out of a chair.
What do you find that's one of the funniest things that you do in your act that people have had some funny things happen, I guess?
I mean, I've had
over the years.
So one time I remember
In band camp.
Yeah, this one time. I remember one time I was just posting all the crazy things that were happening. Uh-huh. Like it was one of those orientation seasons where just crazy random stuff was happening. And our good friend David Hira, who's, you know, my dearest friend on earth, other than my wife
and me,
in case she's listening, and you. David calls me and he's very concerned. He goes, I'm concerned about you, CJ. He says, you know, you keep seeming to have problems. I'm like, oh yeah, but nobody wants to hear me just say, oh, everything went perfect tonight. It was a great show. Like, that's not an interesting story. I'm not going to post that. I'm only going to post the outliers. Right. I'm only the
that's
crazy
what the news is about
happen.
Every night anyhow. Yeah, in the newspaper. Exactly. Yeah. You don't want to hear like, hey, it was another good day.
Yeah, exactly.
Know? Beautiful day in paradise.
So, I mean, I've had crazy stuff. I had this happen when there was a TV crew there, and I had decided one night that I didn't like every time I put the group back down to sleep, it was the same. You know, it was like, look at my hand, 3, 2, 1, sleep, and everybody fall back over. I was like, all right, I'm going to come up with a dozen ways to put people back out, and I'm going to mix it up every time, right?
Okay.
And so I came up with a bit where I made a girl the hypnotist, and so she was going to go, and she was the world's showiest hypnotist. She's going to put people back down just by, you know, bang, bang, bang. So this girl, and it was at University of Nebraska, Lincoln. And she goes, and I tell her this, and it's like, bang, bang. And there's a news crew there.
Yeah.
Doing something about, you know, the events going on at the college. And she goes around and is like, bam, bam. She's getting them like with the gun, which schools don't even like you pointing your fingers and saying bang now.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's like, bang, bang. She gets him with the hip shot, and she gets to the last guy, and she just lifts up her shirt and flashes the dude. And TV cameras right there. Yeah. And I looked, and they weren't on him. And she pulls it back down, and the dude just went, boom, and
went
right back out. No reaction to the fact that she just flashed him at all. And I'm just like, well, did not see that coming right there. So those little incidents like that, I reference throughout my live show now. You know, it's like crazy things that happen. And my favorite thing that's ever happened in a hypnosis show is I do a bit where everybody makes a little finger gun. They point it at their, you know, and again, it's a hypnotic ray gun. It won't hurt you. It just puts you right back to sleep.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
But, But, you know, then it was like you make a finger gun when the person to your right, only when the person to your right says bang, it's going to shoot you right back down to deep and total relaxation. And then, people on the right, you're going to point to them. You're going to say bang when I count 3, 2, 1. Everybody goes 3, 2, 1, bang.
Yeah.
And it was at Tarleton State University, 50 kids on stage, 1,200 kids in the audience, big freshman orientation, summer orientation thing. And there's a row of chairs that's completely full, and then kids all over the floor as well. Everybody goes bang, and everybody falls over except for one little blonde girl sitting in the middle of everybody. And she's just sitting around looking around like, what just happened to all these people? And usually there'll be one person on the end who didn't get shot, and then that's a follow-up bit, right?
Right.
But this girl's in the middle of everybody. And so I walk over, and I'm like, you know, what's going on, you know? And I think, you know, maybe she came out of it. Uh-huh. It happens. Doesn't usually happen that late in the show, but it happens. She looked up at me in front of 1,200 of her classmates with these innocent freshman eyes, and into the microphone, she said, "Nobody banged me."
And the house
came. The house, like the first 8 or 10 rows, lost it immediately. And then it fed back as it registered what she said. And I just went bang, and she fell over. And now I'm laughing so hard I have to sit down on the edge of the stage. I can't even pull it together enough to go on with the show. And it is a riot of laughter. Easily the funniest thing that's ever happened in a show.
And everybody on stage was still out.
Everybody on stage is just out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, no reaction at all. And audience losing it. And I went back and watched the video. And it took 2.5 minutes.
To try and bring it back.
Before I could pull it together enough. And the more I laughed, the more everybody else laughed, of course, too, yeah. You know. And 2.5 minutes is a long time to be standing in front of 1,200 people with nothing happening but laughter. And it was
that's
so
kind of
great.
A good thing, though.
Yeah, and this was pre-YouTube day, so it's like, you know, I have it on an 8mm tape, so I need to find a place I can get that converted to digital, because I'd like to actually have that clip online somewhere. Because
just to kind of prove the situation of what actually happened. Yeah. You know,
and I tell that story in the show, which is why it seemed, you know, it's like rehearsed, because I have told the story an awful lot.
Yeah.
But it was easily the funniest thing that's ever happened in a show. Oh, my God.
That is funny. Well, I tell you, as we start to wrap up over here, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. And so let me ask you, what is your phrase, you know, not like abracadabra, but what is your philosophy of life? What does he live by? What's an important word or phrase that you would use?
I have tattooed on my arm, "Work hard and be nice." I think that's a pretty good,
you're living by
pretty
that.
Good phrase.
Every moment of the day.
Be nice to people. Just, you know, don't be a dick.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good, I don't know if I can say that on your podcast or not. Apologies to my friends named Richard. But you know, just be the kind of person you want to hang out with. You know, I mean, of course, bad things happen to good people, but there's more of a tendency for good things to happen to good people. And, you know, I'm, you know, if wealth is measured in friendships, I'm the richest man on earth. I have some of the
George Bailey, greatest friends.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful life, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's just I'm having the time of my life and just have fun. Have a good show. I used to say this to the kids who worked with me. I would say, you know, go out, have a good time, and a good show will follow naturally. So if you're having fun as a performer, your audience is going to have fun with you.
Yep. And you love your audience, obviously, because they love you back.
And I do that. I don't know, was it Thurston used to say that? I love these people. And yeah. I do literally exactly that before a show.
I do that even when I work in restaurants. As I'm walking in, I've got my case, and before I come in the front door, I change my demeanor, including my face. I put a smile, even if it's a pasted smile, and also I keep saying, I love you, and I'm going to have, not only am I going to have a good time, but they're going to have a good time, and I love every person who's in this restaurant that I'm going to see tonight. And, you know, just kind of walk in with a good attitude when you walk in that front door and the first person sees you, you know, so I think that's important.
Yeah. Be the kind of person that you'd like to hang out with.
That's good advice. Well, CJ, thank you very much. Appreciate your time today.
Yeah, of course.
Your friendship and your words. Thanks again. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was CJ Johnson. This is Scotty out. Well, I really enjoyed having a nice chat and a nice scotch there at C.J. Johnson's Tin Tavern. He had built his own little bar. Actually, it's hard to explain where he lives out in the country, but he's got this great area that is very secluded, a lot of fun, where he's got all of his equipment, and that he not only his illusions, but also the stuff where he makes these things for the college students, and also for his corporate market, where there's going to be coffee mugs, you know, different kinds of things with branding their names and everything on there. Anyhow, all of this equipment plus this little bar area with, I believe, four different beers on tap and a well-stocked bar. It's called the Tin Tavern, and so it was great to kind of sit there in his own little tavern and have this conversation with CJ. So CJ, always enjoy the good times we have, and so thank you very much. And now it's time for Three for Thursday, trick reviews from Murphy's Magic Supplies. The items we're going to be covering today, again, are things that are available from your favorite magic dealer that come to us from Murphy's Magic Supplies. And when you're thinking of your favorite magic dealer, I always recommend that you first of all try to patronize all of the brick-and-mortar magic shops we've got out there. There are not that many that are still remaining, but if there's one near you, please go by and visit them. And if any of these items that I'm talking about here this week or in any previous weeks are not available, you can ask them just to contact Murphy's and they'll get them right out to you, I'm sure. If you are not near a brick-and-mortar magic shop, then be sure to stop by our online shop here at themagicwordpodcast.com. Go to the magic store and there you'll find all of the items that we are talking about here and have previously reviewed. Anyhow, the items we're going to be covering today, the three items, are things that are kind of mentalism related, and one is psychokinesis, the other two are really mentalism types of things, and the first of which is so spanking brand new that there are not even any copies of it available for sale. You'll have to pre-order them so that way that they'll be shipped out to you by the 1st of August. So this is coming out to you just a few days before the official release date of this new item. Our first item up for review today is called Switchelope, which is a four-way out envelope, and it's by Arnott. And Arnott has a great idea here, actually, that was based upon a Cody Fisher idea. And let me tell you, first off, I guess, whenever that you receive this, don't have it close to your wallet. There are a lot of magnets involved with this. It's not, I guess, a big secret for magicians that some tricks use magnets. This is one of them. But it's very cleverly made, well made, and something that I would recommend if you're going to be needing to use some way of a four-way out. Now, there are other ways of doing this that would be smaller if you're going to be doing something in a walk-around situation, certainly for four-way outs. But this is something that playing from the stage or from a parlor situation is very large. The envelope itself measures probably, it looks like about 16 inches by about, I don't know, 10 inches or something like that, 9 or 10 inches. It's a pretty good size envelope, basically, with a window, kind of a plastic window inside, and there is an envelope. Now, the envelope can be signed. It doesn't really matter whether it is or not. That's just kind of gilding the lily, but the idea, again, is that you have a prediction of one of four things for that you need as an out. And in this particular case, whenever that they select the right one, they reach inside the envelope, and your hand is seen clearly in the clear plastic as you pull out the envelope. If it's that correct one on that envelope, you open it up, and inside is a folded piece of paper, which you offer to the spectator. They remove it, read it, and of course that matches the prediction matches what you said was going to be happening. If it is not, and there are one of three other envelopes, then there are some things that you can do that, thanks to the use of magnetic power, magneto, that it's going to be able to actually switch for other envelopes. And again, it's very cleverly made. I don't want to tip the secret at all because of how well it is made and what that it does, but basically suffice it to say that you can cleanly show the envelope and as a spectator walks up on stage, you then open the envelope, let them take the piece of paper out, which again matches that prediction matches what you said it was going to. And so there
there are three envelopes that can be switched for. The first one that's inside, of course, is your original prediction. Now, the thing about this is sometimes that the envelope might get shaken down to the bottom of this window envelope, if you will, and by reaching your hand into it a number of times, it could, over time, start to become a little bit brittle or difficult to try to get your hand down, and by tamping it down in order to get the envelope out might look a little bit different. But they can see that there's an envelope which is kind of rattling around inside this window envelope. And again, basically, you reach inside, pull the envelope out, and you then display the envelope clearly by just, you're still holding the envelope, the larger envelope, with the brown envelope on the outside of it as a spectator comes up. Again, that you then would take the envelope, you hold it between two hands, open up the flap of the envelope, and let them take out your prediction, which matches. It's kind of a finicky thing, and as I said, because there are a lot of magnets involved, I would suggest that it takes quite a bit of practice. This is not an out-of-the-box kind of thing that you're going to start immediately doing. You might think that you can, but there are some little touches he explains on the instructions that will make it a lot easier when you are performing. But when I have fiddled with this, there have been some hang-ups, and as I said, it's just a little bit finicky. The magnets are just the right strength. They're not too strong, nor are they too light as far as their magnetism quality. So I'm just saying that it is well worth practicing quite a bit. What I do like about this perhaps most is, again, the size of it, that it is something that's great for stage. A lot of mentalism tricks do not have props. Most of it is just you and the microphone. So here you have something else that could be on a stand or somewhere nearby that is your prediction that is large enough for everybody to see. So, and it is pretty much hands-free because you're just taking out the envelope and opening the flap, and then the volunteer opening it up to confirm that that prediction matches what you said it was going to. Anyhow, it was something that I would recommend. Very well made. A little bit finicky. Takes a little bit of work whenever that you first get it in order to perfect it. I wouldn't say that you should buy it today and put it in your show tonight. You shouldn't do that with anything, obviously. But if you're looking for something in which that you're going to be needing a four-way out, this is a good one, particularly for stage. And again, it's called Switchalope. I recommend it by Arnaud. Oh, let me add just one more thing, and that is this is a very special item which is not really even available. It's only available for pre-sale. So as you're listening to this, you can request to purchase this, but it's not going to be released until July 30th, 2018. So if you make a order right now, it won't be sent to you until they are available. So it will be available again after the 1st of August. So in other words, you're going to be getting something that no one else would have. Certainly it is one of the newest things available out there. Again, Switchalope by Arnaud. The next item up for you is called the Seer Deck. That's S-E-E-R, the Seer Deck by Liam Montier. And this is from Big Blind Media, and Liam always is a good demonstrator on all of his instructional videos, and this is an online instructional video. Let me just say it's a combination of kind of a mashup of a Karan deck and a Svengali. And it's not something that you could easily make up yourself, certainly. It's well worth the price for what you're going to be getting here. It is. I've always loved the Karan deck, first of all, and have used it frequently, and there are a lot of new decks that are out to use, or you can make up your own if it's just a Karan deck, but this has something else going for it, several other things, actually. The effect is, basically, you have two volunteers when they each select a different card randomly, and as they view the card, then you can essentially tell them what their card was, with a kicker ending for the second one. In other words, the first one is very powerful, but the second one will definitely bring some gasps and oohs and ahs. It is very straightforward, very self-working. It's something that is a beginner trick that you could do pretty much out of the box. It's all in your presentation. There are a few things I will mention. That is, the deck that you will receive will have different cards for the force cards and then what the one is in the instructional video. So you'll have to do a little bit of preparation with some of the extra cards you are given in order to prepare for that kicker ending. It's not a big deal, just a little bit of preparation. Doesn't take but just a few moments just with a magic marker. And so this, again, is something that I would recommend. Very cool if you want to carry around. This is just an additional deck, though. You know, again, if pocket management is at a premium and you are wanting to do something different, this is something that you could do kind of in a strolling environment as well, because potentially people could select other cards in different parts of the room. So it's something that you could carry with you, and it's all self-contained, all just in one card box. And again, it's called the Seer Deck by Liam Montier, and it's something I recommend.
Oh, and by the way, one more thing, that is whenever that you're ordering the deck, they come in both red and blue, depending upon whatever that your preference is. So this way, if you're switching decks, you're going to use a cold deck switch, then you're using a blue deck already, you might want to order a blue deck, and the vice versa with a red. Also, at the end, one of the predictions has writing on the back of the card, which you will have to do yourself. And I believe that the writing will show up better on a red deck than it does a blue deck. Just something to keep in mind whenever that you're placing your order. The third trick that's going to be up for review, this 3 for Thursday, tricks available from Murphy's Magic Supplies, is going to be BioBender by Eric Jones. First of all, Eric is a wonderful instructor, and the video is quite clear. The online video that gives you the instructions is everything that you need. The effect on the BioBender is essentially a bent coin. You borrow a coin from a spectator, or you can have a coin of your own, and they can initial both sides of it, and they open their hand, and when you put the coin on their hand, you put your finger or thumb on it, and whenever you lift your thumb, then it has a bend in it. There are different reasons why I like this particular bend or bender, and one of them is because you have a U bend, which is a slight bend, but certainly visible enough that you can tell. And it is something also that they could put in their own hand, and you just tell them to squeeze their hand, and as they open their hand, they can see that it does have that bend, but they can't feel the bend in their hand after you put it there. You're not switching the coin or anything. It is actually the coin that they sign, and you bend it in real time. The gimmick that they're using employs two thumb tips. I can explain that, but the gimmick that's built into the thumb tips is quite unusual and something that you wouldn't be making yourself, certainly. It is very inexpensively priced for what you're going to be getting here. And anyhow, without going into all the details of how the thing is made, it's all explained on the video. Again, what I like about this then also is that it's something that, again, employs something that we're already familiar with, and that is a thumb tip, or two of them, actually. But because of the gimmick that's on there, then you can bend it. So a question is, can I bend it? Well, I can bend it myself. It does take a little bit of work, as he suggests, just going through a roll of coins, and you can also bend them back the other way if you want to get it down to perfection. But I fiddled with it quite a bit, and it didn't take very long for me to figure out how to make this look surreptitious and very natural. And I think that you can too, regardless of your age, or depending upon if you're older and have arthritis, I don't know, or if you're too young, you don't feel like you have the arm strength or the hand strength. As he explains it, there are some ways that you can do this that certainly makes it a little bit easier for you. As Eric says, he's no Arnold Schwarzenegger, and nor am I from the hand strength standpoint, but it is something that I believe that you can do. And it's something that you can carry with you easily in your pockets with a thumb tip in each pocket, so this way that you can reach in and load it, and all you need is the gimmick, and then, or the gimmicks, and a magic marker, and coins that are borrowed. So that's what I like about this, is it is a borrowed thing. There are some other ideas and things out there. Minnie Lindenfeld has a great thing called an ox bender, which I highly recommend also. It is just something that's done just with one hand. I have fiddled with that a lot and have performed it. It is something that requires a lot of hand strength, because you're bending that with
one hand. Here you are actually using two hands, so it makes it twice as easy as it does just with the one hand. Again, I recommend the Ox Bender, which I've got available over here in the store as well at the Magic Word Podcast. But the BioBender is something that I believe that you can use and you can bend very easily, with some ease. Again, because it is employing something that we're already familiar with, you already know the kind of handling, I guess. And Eric, again, is a great instructor and will teach you exactly how this is done. So it's something that I would recommend. It is fairly inexpensive, and it's called BioBender by Eric Jones. So there you have it. Three for Thursday. Available from your favorite magic dealer, direct from Murphy's Magic Supplies. I again want to thank Murphy's for sending us these effects for review. And also, if you go to our Facebook page, to the Magic Word Podcast, there you will see whenever I receive these box of items from Murphy's each month, I do an unboxing. So you can see what kinds of things are going to be coming up that I'm going to be reviewing during the ensuing month. And as mentioned before, I hope that you will patronize your nearest brick and mortar magic shop. But if you are nowhere near one and you are buying your magic online, then be sure to contact us here, and that is at themagicwordpodcast.com, and go to the magic store, and there you'll see all of the items for sale that we have reviewed here on The Magic Word. Well, it's going to be a wrap for this week. It's been another pretty full episode. I hope that you enjoyed the inspirational comments that CJ had to offer there on various fronts, whether it has to do with hypnotism or college circuits or marketing. Gee, just a whole lot of things. So thank you very much again, CJ, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in each Thursday and listening to these podcasts, and also when I'm at magic conventions, for tuning in on a daily basis and getting the updates that I am fortunate to give whenever I talk with friends and talent and the registrants and everybody else. And before long, I'm going to be traveling to actually to the Orleans Hotel, which is going to be in Las Vegas for Magic Live. And I'll be broadcasting daily updates from the convention floor. But that's not for another couple weeks. Next week, we'll be talking with Andy Dallas, who is a past president of the Society of American Magicians. Also, he owns his own brick-and-mortar magic shop and at one time was a professional escape artist. A very interesting guy. So, until next week, stay well, get booked, work hard, and be nice. And go out and have a good time, and a good show will follow naturally. This is Scotty out.